Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, second generation president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. Our guest today brings together entrepreneurial vision, operational excellence, and a unique family dynamic, all inside a company that serves one of the most complex markets in the world, the U.S. government. He's Nick D'Ambrosio. He's the founder and senior executive at Nomadix, a technology company focused on advanced sensing solutions for defense, security, and critical infrastructure. With deep expertise in federal procurement and an eye on innovation, Nick helps guide the company's strategic growth and ensures its technologies deliver real-world impact. But here's where it gets even more interesting. Nick's father-in-law joined the business in 2019 as Nomadix controller. What started as a practical solution to fill a key leadership role has turned into a powerful example of blending family trust with financial discipline in a high-stakes environment. Nick, we're thrilled to have you on the show today. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so let's start with Nomadix. I probably didn't frame what the company does completely accurately because it's fairly complicated. So in your own words, tell us, what does Nomadix do and what excites you about the mission at Nomadix?
Sure. Thank you. Nomadix is a 20-year-old geospatial intelligence, defense, and engineering entity that grew out of actually environmental and construction, founded in 2006, because that's what I liked to do at the time. And as time has gone on, we've been brought further and further into the defense and federal space. And although every now and again, we're lucky enough to bring on a project that has an environmental or construction component, for the most part, it's GIS engineering and support of the warfighter effort for both the United States Navy and more recently, the United States Army.
Wow.
So supporting two armed service branches simultaneously as a small entity certainly comes with a lot of challenges while we're also supporting the private sector. But because we're small and nimble, our MO is semper gumby, ever flexible. We usually say yes to anything that comes along our way, and then we figure out how to do it later, like any other good consultant.
Excellent. Now, at this point, having worked fairly extensively in the federal space, working with two branches of military, talk about what is it that's really challenging about doing that? And also, what are some of the things in your mind that are rewarding for a company like Nomadix?
Getting into the federal space is something that happens very gradually over a long period of time as a marathon of baby steps. It's not something that you can, I'm going to start a company that is going to do defense engineering. This company was founded doing ecological work, wetland delineations and threatened endangered species surveys, things that I liked to do because that was what my original training was. And I've got two masters and a PhD in environmental science and policy and management and sustainability. And we were actually brought in on the BP spill in 2010 by an entity, a prime that was working for the EPA, FEMA, USDA, Coast Guard, and Air Force. And because we were brought in, it was a federal program, and it was a civil and ultimately a criminal lawsuit. We were made government-approved contractors. We were provided with temporary incidental clearances. So we were effectively in the system. In 2011, we were brought on by ExxonMobil again for another crisis spill response, where we got further entrenched in the government, supporting, again, Air Force, Coast Guard, EPA, FEMA, USDA. And in 2012, we were brought in on our first Navy program, which fell underneath the NAVCO5's ONR, Office of Naval Research, Environmental Health and Safety Program, which was right up our alley. We were brought in to provide what I was under the impression was environmental health and safety support. After about 10 months of research and development, I was sent over to Bahrain, And while I was stationed there, learned that it was not actually environmental work I was doing at all, but it was battle space management and unmanned combat development, ordnance development, and a litany of other systems engineering and safety protocol development on unmanned combat. But while I'm there, also, can you please build the facility where these drones that you're designing are also going to live? So I called the folks I was reporting to and said, I am an ecologist. I have no idea what any of this is. And they said, you're smart, figure it out. And so that was our first foray into the defense space. And as time has gone on, we were gradually pulled further and further in, leveraging a lot of our skill sets in the private sector for government benefit. Because we were small, we got brought in by larger primes that needed very niche boutique service support at low cost. And we were able to deliver that over and over again. And as you build up that repertoire of work in the federal space over time, qualifies as past performance, and then you are able to leverage that for the next program, the next project, inevitably allowing us to get to the point of being a Navy prime ourselves in 2021, which has opened up a litany of other doors that would have remained locked to us otherwise. And so it is not something that A is something you can just jump into, and B, takes a lot of planning, a lot of compliance, a lot of money and expenditure to be compliant with all of the government's financial reporting mechanisms and their cybersecurity mechanisms and their facility mechanisms, all in order to win the contract to do the work. And that could be the deliverable of a weapon system or a series of documentation and policies or staff augmentation, litany of things that we've brought in on, been brought in on that I find very rewarding. Supporting the warfighter is very noble work. I enjoy it tremendously. The stresses of interfacing with the federal government, it's even the best case scenario, they still move at a glacial pace, and you are usually at the mercy of the budget approvals and the contract award mechanisms as they come about. So it is never something that moves at the pace of the private sector. But because we still service the private sector in a 60-40 split, 60% government, 40% private, there's never not something for us to do.
So, in founding the company, one day becoming a prime provider to the U.S. Navy doesn't sound like that was particularly on the radar at
Never.
that
If you told me that this is what I'd be doing 20 years after founding the company, I would call you a liar outright. And to this day, we are now on our fourth Navy contract supporting advanced technology and research work once again for NA CENTCOM at NAVCENT for Fifth Fleet. When my wife and I were dating 10 years ago, I told her what my background was and what I was actually doing, and those two things were so incongruent that she thought I mustn't date this guy, he's a lunatic. Yeah, it's not what I started out doing at all, and to this day, Captain Allen, who I still report to, bust my chops on, Nick, you have a PhD? Yes, sir. It's in. We don't tell people what it's in, just that you have it. Yes, sir. So you get looked at crossways if, as a PhD in environmental, are coming in as a subject matter expert in unmanned combat. But 13 years of support and Navy's still happy.
It's not a totally uncommon tale for others that work in the Department of Defense or the government space. A lot of times they're pulled in, they don't
Sure.
push in, and typically pulled in because they've done something rather remarkable in their core area of expertise that gets them pulled in, and then good work begets more good work, and then they stay in,
Really and
much
truly.
as you have. Certainly, it was a series of doing a lot of the right things that led you to this point in time.
It's when preparation and opportunity meet is the definition of luck. And I've learned to just never say no, even if it's something that is way out in left field. What I have found is that, especially working for for government and defense, is that your job is to make their job easy and figure out the problem for them. And if you can do that reliably, repeatedly, then you are in a good standing to continue to be brought in to do work because the confidence is there that you'll deliver what it is that they need. Now, don't get me wrong, one screw up can ruin 100 attaboys, and things do happen from time to time, but especially in the Defense Department's eyes, if you take responsibility for things that have gone awry on your watch and rectify them as quickly as possible within a reasonable amount of time, with, of course, with documentation, it is it can be looked upon as being seen as responsible enough to admit your mistakes and rectify them accordingly.
Cool. Cool. So a couple of years ago, roughly 6 years ago, you made a decision. You brought your father-in-law, his name is Mike, right? Okay, you brought Mike and your father-in-law as the company controller. Talk for a minute. What was that decision-making process like, and what gave you the confidence to blend family and business in that way? This was your father-in-law, and this was the point you were married for
Year and change.
a 1 year and change. Okay, that was a rather big step at the time, I would think. So talk about that.
Tremendous. It
Yeah.
was actually, I think it was more of a joint effort decision than it was me bringing Mike in. In 2019, Nomad hit a pivotal point in our growth where we finally expanded to seven figures. And we were at a dozen people and seven-figure revenue. And by all stretches of the imagination, I am not a numbers guy. I specialize in environmental construction and unmanned combat development. Those two things do not talk to each other at all. Mike had just semi-retired, but he left a company, Spectro, multinational, multi-billion dollar firm, as their controller, and didn't have really anything to do. He was home, mowing his lawn, hanging out with my mother-in-law, cleaning the house, and as family conversations over dinner continued to progress, he heard of the company's success and the growth and my inability to manage the company's finances because small firm managing two different industries. I'm the face of the firm. I'm also the engineer of record. And he semi-volunteers, maybe Nick, I can come in and at least straighten up the books for you a little bit. And my wife thought this would be great to give dad something to do, get him out of the house, help you out a little bit so I'm not working so late because we were working on trying to get pregnant. And I thought this would be a match made in heaven for at least a little while to get us up and running. So 2019, Mike comes on, and the first thing he does is finds enough money that I had not accounted for to effectively cover his own salary for the year. I should not be in charge of the money whatsoever. I'm good at making it, I'm good at spending it. The management and the tracking is not a thing that I do. So Mike, right off the bat, his value is completely covered. And the first month bleeds into the second, into the third, and he's finding more and more things that could be improved upon, more efficiencies, implementation. Maybe we should do this, and maybe we should do that. And it got to the point where I just said, Mike, can you just handle it? Sure, Nick, no problem. The irony is that he wanted to come in for a formal interview. Shows up at the house in a suit and tie with a resume, meets the other staff, has a formal interview. He's been doing this for months, but okay. So he really took over and seized upon things and made it a much more efficient and effective financial aspect of the firm, which of course allowed us to start bringing in more work year after year because there was now somebody who was managing the in and the out, the AP, the AR. And as we got larger in 2021, 2022, we saw the writing on the walls that Mike was taking on more than he originally intended. He was working more hours. He, at that point, had three grandsons that he was babysitting because he's still my father-in-law and grandpa.
Yeah.
This is was supposed to be a part-time gig to help me out, give him something to do, and allow him to see his grandsons and do semi-retired grandpa stuff.
Sure.
That wasn't happening. So my wife and her sisters came to me and said, Dad's working too much. Can you do something about it? Sure, no problem. So we hired him a bookkeeper who has been a godsend as we continue to grow into more complicated financials and took a lot off of Mike's desk, opened up a lot of bandwidth. Well, Mike, the good Irish Catholic that he is, immediately found more tasks to backfill that vacuum of space. Completely undoing the whole reason why we brought Courtney on in the first place. But I can't complain because now that we're in the space that we're in, we have a almost full-time controller and almost a full-time bookkeeper managing a lot.
Yeah.
And but the trust factor there really comes into play where, first and foremost, my father-in-law is managing the company finances, and my wife is managing the house finances. So two people that I'm related to tell me, no, I can't buy that all the time. Doesn't matter which forum that I'm in, I'm not allowed to spend money on anything. And The fun part is that Mike takes a very vested interest in how the company's financial health is because it directly impacts one of his daughters and two of his grandchildren. It's very nice to have that comfort level there. And then the other part is whenever Grandpa comes over in the morning to babysit his grandsons while Mom and I get the day ready, we're talking work at 7:30 in the morning. So
That's
communicate.
interesting. So that's how, okay, because a lot of it works differently in a lot of different family business dynamics, but you categorize the flow. So with you and Mike, so he's in the office. Is it all business? And when you're home, it sounds like sometimes business and family time blend a little. How does that,
Oh
talk about
man,
that for a moment.
there is no demising wall at all
Okay.
between the familial and the collegial.
Okay.
And I think that's actually somewhat the corporate culture that we've developed here over 20 years. Now we're a small entity, 25 folks. We are actively growing, but I've done everything I can to really make it tight, controlled growth for a litany of reasons. It's a double-edged sword, I will say, that folks here can be so familial and be so relaxed. It takes a very specialized kind of person to be able to operate in this kind of space. A lot of self-discipline, but also the ability to be casual as long as the work gets done. I have found that it works rather well because some folks have been here. Our director of R&D, Jose, for example, has been here about 15 years.
Okay.
Our director of IT, been here almost 10 years. And so having that blurred wall between outside and inside the office, it can both be a boon and a curse, but I have found more often than not, it allows for a lot more of an easy flow of the information and the dynamic and just the general sense of well-being on both sides of the coin. And frankly, I think Mike enjoys being challenged as a semi-retiree that goes to work every day on his own schedule, on his own time. And for me, there's that reliable anchor point of somebody I know is watching the shop because I just simply cannot, at least from a financial standpoint. Our administrator and our operations folks, they have their hands very firmly grounded on the things that they're in charge of. But from the financial health of things, Mike is very much on top of it.
So there's a lot of trust there. And it sounds like at the root of it, Nick, it sounds like you guys were off to a good start in your relationship even pre his joining you. Like you sounds like you have a fairly solid relationship overall. Yeah.
We do. Laura and I have been together almost a decade. When I met her parents while we were dating, you're in your 30s, a divorcee, you're an entrepreneur, and all of these things come with red flags. But Mike was able to really dispel a lot of that. Now, the one hiccup we have is he's Knights of Columbus, I'm a Freemason, and it's just as bad as being Seton Hall and Rutgers. And there was a lot of off-standing and side-eyeing for a while, but we got past it.
Okay,
Now,
that's
the
good.
irony is now here is that I could say I write him a paycheck, but in reality, he writes me one. So we still have to be on good terms
That's right.
every day.
So, if you look back or look to the present, what's maybe an unexpected lesson or takeaway that you found about this whole concept of bringing family into a key operational role in business? What's something that you discovered along that journey?
I was hesitant on bringing a family member in because you hear so many horror stories out there in the real, out there in industry. And previous experience of my own, my ex-wife and I ran this company before we got divorced, and there were issues that I had found we had disagreed upon that really created a rift in the working relationship that added to the personal. Now, the personal already had its own fractures in the foundation, but the working together made it worse. And I think really helped speed us along to the final termination. So coming in from that, I had my own hesitations, but at that point, I was so desperate for the help that just having somebody with the knowledge sense there that at the very least I could trust with to keep me honest would be a good move. And he had said it early on, Nick, if this doesn't work, no harm, no foul. You're not obligated to give me a job. I'm here to help you. If I don't do what you want, and if I don't do a great job, or if I don't like it myself, then we don't have to continue. That was 6 years ago.
Yeah, but you were very upfront about that, or at least he was. That probably made it a bit easier.
It was both sides. And it was very
Yeah.
important to be both sides. Again, in my industry and in life in general, it doesn't help anybody to mince words. Having it up front, it may be blunt, it may hurt people's feelings, but at least everyone's positioning right from the get-go.
So in a company that has what I'll call a fairly highly technical offering,
Truly.
do you have this public sector practice and some private sector work as well? So how do you go about your approach to building the brand and communicating that value proposition to in a way that, resonates both with those in government and DoD and those that are in private sector?
Actually, it's when we had defense and environmental running simultaneously, which we did from 2012 through 2020, 2021, it was an exorbitant challenge to really market ourselves accordingly. Because you're an environmental firm that's doing defense work, you're a defense company doing environmental, none of it made any sense. But it was okay at the time because we were so small that we weren't even a blip on the radar. We were under seven figures, we were under a dozen people. It really didn't matter how we marketed ourselves because the work that was coming in was all word of mouth. Not to say it wasn't passive, it wasn't aggressive. It wasn't passive, but we did almost no marketing because we were fed by a whole series of very reliable customers. The US Navy being one of them, which was one of our biggest patrons, helped us leverage a lot of the IP development and the mechanisms that we had learned doing defense work into the private sector. The environmental and construction, as time went on, became more and more of my own passion project. And trying to have all of that mashed into a one sheer for marketing purposes became so counterproductive that we had to make a decision. And before COVID kicked in 2020, we saw the writing on the walls that the environmental industry was going through a series of changes with the state gubernatorial changeover. And through insurance requirements and regulation requirement for compliance and things like LSRP requirements, it became more than we could reasonably manage doing both defense and environmental. And so we put in place a pivot plan. It was supposed to be 5 years. That was going to take us out of environmental and construction over a very long period of time and allow us to focus on defense, engineering, and GIS. The GIS was one of the founding services this company offered. It had an environmental component to it, but we were very strong in GIS. Micro, macro level geospatial intelligence, very highly specialized, very boutique work. So we already had this plan in place. COVID slams into the economy, and of the $3 million that we had lined up for 2020, half of it disappeared. That was all environmental and construction because no one's buying properties, no one's building properties. There's nothing for us to do in that space. So we pivoted the entire firm over to defense, engineering, GIS, and we leveraged a lot of our capabilities for programs like Operation Warp Speed, support for CDC, HHS, DHS. For a lot of the COVID response, COVID case management, vaccine logistics, grant management, on and on. And we were able to see, so we truncated this pivot plan from 5 years to 2 years. And suddenly the marketing aspect of it was a lot easier because now we're focused on GIS, engineering, and defense. And the GIS and the engineering part really allow themselves to be transmutable between the government sector, defense specifically, and the private sector. And what we have found is that even though we're small, we are not the cheapest by any stretch of the imagination. We are quite expensive. The reason for that is because at the end of the day, we are defense engineers that are doing work for the private sector and leveraging our very unique specialized skill set and data accessibility into folks like Colliers and Verizon and SHI for very specific IP development with data sets that are not typically available to a lot of our competitors. And so we have found the marketing, again, we don't do a whole lot of marketing because our client base is very self-identifying, but those who do know us do pass us on to others, and these are the guys you want because there's in business for 20 years, it's rare that we have to remobilize if we've not delivered something right the first time.
Excellent, excellent. So let me ask you about another topic that seems to be on every industry's mind these days, which is artificial intelligence, AI. Is AI playing a role at Nomadics currently, either internally or with the solutions you're delivering to your clients, whether they be the defense side or private sector?
Oh, very much. We've been on the AI side, I'd say at least a decade before it became what in vogue. So the work that we've been doing for unmanned combat system going all the way back to 2012 has always followed the semi-autonomous 80-20 rule, where the drone, the weapon system, the AI involved as a semi-autonomous, remote-controlled, autonomous vehicle follows. And I'm trying to pick my words very carefully here. We qualify it as a dummy AI, where it does 80% of the data aggregation, analytics, and delivery to the end user to say, I believe that this object in the water is this. Or I believe that work we had done for Verizon, that the best place to put a 5G signal node is here. And it turns that information over to an end user, an operator, a technician, engineer, who does the final 20% worth of modification or data entry or querying or decision making as to whether this is a go, no go option, if that helps. AI, and I know a lot of people are utilizing things like ChatGPT and Grok and so on for some more of the administrative and text-based aspects of the work, but there's more in the development for identifying disinformation campaigns and placement of signal projectors and to us, this is nothing new. In fact, this is just the latest iteration of technology that we've been exposed to and working with. I'd say going as far back to our founding in 2006, we were working with Esri's ArcGIS, I want to say 8.1, which allowed you at the time to write your own coding within, I'm going to get this wrong, it's either Python, I want to say Python. And was a very rudimentary AI kind of arrangement. So again, this is nothing new for us. I do get quite a kick out of watching the news or hearing people go on and on about AI is this and AI is that. I'm just saying, man, oh man, it's the same kind of Marvel sparkle when people look at electric vehicles, and then you go to Thomas Edison's house here in the park in New Jersey, and you see his electric cars from the early 1900s.
What's new is not necessarily brand new.
Really and truly, I think what is really unique about the current situation of AI is the practical applicability, what people are using it for. The problem is that, like any tool, it's a garbage in, garbage out mechanism. It doesn't know or doesn't know unless you tell it so. Now, if you're allowing it to do a lot more of its own autonomy in data aggregation, coming up with its own conclusion, you have to be wary that it's pulling information from all the sources it has readily available and doing its best to separate what is true from what isn't true. But even still, there are parameters under which it still must function. And it is not a truly autonomous arrangement yet, nor do I think it ever really should be. And as a complete sci-fi buff, you know, there are real problems I feel with having an AI making full-on decisions. But practical applications like identifying bronchitis in lung X-rays is fantastic, but that doesn't remove the need for having a three-decade trained physician set of eyes looking at it as well. Even if they come up with the same answer in the same amount of time, I still feel that AI should never be really taken as gospel for your first, last, and only response to something. If you're going to utilize it as a verifying secondary, if you can use it as a primary, fine, but have additional resources to back it up.
And it's very intriguing that your firm and your work were very much kind of a ground floor exposure to the earliest iterations of AI, which were, in my humble opinion, rather crude, and they've
Truly,
come a long way.
truly.
But it sounds my philosophy and yours are probably aligned in that there's always going to be some sort of a hybrid, that there's always going to be, because AI lacks judgment, and AI sometimes to a fault aims to please. And sometimes pleasing, or the pleasing answer, may not be the right one, but it's the one that pleases me. So that's something to be wary of. But it's definitely an intriguing space, one that we are obviously, my industry is becoming more immersed in. Our philosophy here is just to be practical.
Really and truly. And I think that's part of the reason why we've never labeled ourselves as an AI company. And I even hesitate to say that we're a technology company, because it do with the moniker of you're just a bunch of computer nerds. And although a lot of the work that we do does fit in that space, there is an actual in-field, real-world, practical application of the work that we're doing. And so we're not a software entity. We're not an AI company. We utilize these things as tools with real practical skill sets that we've honed over decades worth of work for the end result. But we're also wary enough that if the end result that's developed by the materials and the skill sets that, I'm sorry, the tools at our disposal doesn't necessarily meet with what we independently would come up with as the answer, clients are asking us for the answer. That's all they really care about. How we get there is really up to us. Mm-hmm. We have the wherewithal with a number of GISPs and PhDs and PEs on staff that what the computer spits out may not necessarily agree with what we know to be the right answer. Mm-hmm. And so there, that discrepancy then needs to be investigated. Or in some cases, we can present both options and allow the customer to tell us what they feel fits better with their mission directive. Mm-hmm. In which case, we will provide them with reasons for either side, both for and against, that, again, to your point, meet with what their expectations are.
That's some really good points relative to, I mean, striking that balance. Getting back around to Numatics, because it's very interesting that the journey that the company has taken, the journey you've taken. So certainly, I would say, one could say that the mission of Numatics has most certainly evolved substantially over time. But in terms of your vision, or maybe some of your core philosophies, principles, values, what are some of the constants, Nick, that have held fast across that span as this journey has gone from environmental into more DoD work and other and GIS and other areas that were really a departure from maybe your initial, hey, this is what we're going to be doing? What are some things that maybe have held fast and held true across the span of years?
I've always just wanted to do good work. And now I could have made a lot more money over time if I did things with far less scruples than I've got. I've always wanted to create a work environment where the staff that works here, the collective we, are effectively happy and inside that circle of safety. Doing good work and being a small giant is more important to me than being a multinational, multi-billion dollar company. The work really, first off, the work we do that supports the warfighter is very noble work, even if they never know who we are, which is fine. I don't need the limelight anymore. I'm not in my 20s anymore. I don't care. It's more important to me that I can put my head down at night knowing that we do the best we can for our customers, even if they don't like the answer, it's still the right one. And that the folks that work here are happy and comfortable and safe. And this kind of environment, it truly is not for everybody. There's a lot of self-discipline, a lot of self-reliance and independence, and that doesn't work for everyone. The micromanagement aspect of it, I simply don't do. I'd rather have folks that understand the concept of fire and forget and handle the mission for the customer. It's more important to me to be seen. Reputation is everything, especially in this industry. And I'd rather be able to be seen as honest and forthright, even though people may disagree with the end result sometimes. Doing the right thing is always more important to me. And in some cases, that comes at the expense of the happiness. But I, being in business for 20 years, has taught me an awful lot about your name is everything out there. And doing good work always begets more work.
Sure does. It sure does. As does doing the right thing, I would say, too.
Absolutely. And believe you me, doing the right thing isn't always the fun thing.
But not at all.
Do it anyway.
Not at
and
all.
Character is what we do when people aren't watching. And believe me, in my time in business, I've had to do things that, although they were the right thing and the legal thing, they weren't always the fun thing.
Sure.
And sometimes as leadership, you have to bear the brunt alone.
Yeah,
It
that's
comes with
absolutely
territory.
true. That's absolutely true. One thing you did right, it sounds like, well, among other things, was bringing your father-in-law into the business. That worked out really well for you, and it worked out well for him. Thinking about that for a minute, and that did work out great. Advice might you give to another leader who says, I've got this family member I'm thinking about bringing to the business. It could be a father-in-law, it could be a brother, it could be a sister, it could be a, an uncle. What advice would you give to them about having the similar success that you had? What might you tell them to frame that up?
You really need to level set expectations, you especially at the onset, because if you're looking to bring on a family member, do not bring them on out of pity or so and so needs a job or they're bored. It's got to go in both directions. If my father-in-law was not a competent controller for a much more complicated firm than us, there would be no reason to bring him on. And at the same sense, he knew that there was a skill set he could offer us where we were severely lacking that would directly impact his daughter and eventual grandchildren. So I would spend the time with having a conversation with that family member about managing expectations on both sides. And that if it doesn't work, everybody has to just understand it's just business, it's not personal. And that, especially on a small ship like ours, everybody has to row. And there's the anticipation that there will be hard times, just like there are good times. And if you're going to be bringing in a family member, whether it's unspoken or not, there's the expectation that when things get bad, and it's inevitable, every company will experience bad times and setbacks, that the folks in the family aspect are going to be the ones to seize on the tightest. And I will tell you, certainly when we had hard times, Mike was among the most stalwart anchor points, the real columns that kept his company together. And but at the same time, not everybody's going to have that kind of old school work ethic that somebody of Mike's caliber and age bracket does. So, you really need to vet this person entirely. Like case in point, my mom came to me and said, "Your brother lost his job. He really needs a job." My brother is a hospital administrator. I can't give him a job here to do what? He wouldn't be qualified to do anything. And I can't put him on a contract because the government wouldn't accept him. Well, I can't just give him a job for funsies because I have to make the money to give him the job. And then what am I going to have him do? It has to go both ways, and everybody has to be in this on the same page and understanding that. Oh, here's the other part, right? Poor Mike thought this was going to be a short-term engagement. And he's been kicking retirement down the road every year for another one more year. I'll do one more year. And it finally got to the point where this Christmas, I said, "Mike, we're not kicking you out. You don't have to retire. You can stay as long as you like or not. Just let me know." And then it came back to him. He goes, "What am I going to do all day? I can't mow the lawn. I can't go to church." He already goes to church like at least once a day. He goes, "I can't go twice a day. And my mother-in-law's still working for at least another few years, so I may as well stay here." He gets the schedule that he wants. He does what he likes. And it's no one's banging him into the head to come into the office. He does what he needs to when he needs to.
One of the things that I've appreciated over this discussion so far, Nick, is the you've been very humble and very authentic in saying that, hey, there's some things I'm good at and there's some things I'm not good at. And I've got this father-in-law that happens to have an overdeveloped capability in an area that I don't particularly
Mike's overdeveloped capability extends into the selflessness and the Irish Catholic and being born with original sin and now extends to a staff of a couple dozen and growing. But I'll be the first to admit, if you want a submarine sunk, I'm on it, no problem. But don't trust me with 20 bucks.
Recently, you benefited from a recent achievement. Talk about that for a moment.
So the Morris County Chamber of Commerce has recognized us as the Morris County 2025, I'm going to get it wrong, Community Business Awardee of the Year. And I apologize to the chamber for butchering the title, but Kevin Murphy from the chamber desperately tried for a week and change to get a hold of me before he finally did. And he's, "Nick, oh, I'm so glad I got you. Congratulations." And I said, "For what?" He said, "You won." I said, "I won what?" He goes, "You won a major award." I'm like, brain mind power art. Major award. And then he explains to me what it was. Apparently, we were nominated and voted upon, and we won. And oh my God, this is amazing. So there's a whole outing and a lunch and a dinner and an award, and I have to give a speech, and we're bringing our preschooler and our infant along, and you know, what amazing timing, how serendipitous. And then there's a sly character around our office. I know who it is. I'm like, you did this. And they're not having a clue what you're talking about. Not a clue. But we are extremely humbled to be recognized by the county for all of our work. And we're under the impression that especially it's the work we're doing for Picatinny Arsenal here in Wharton, all the new hires that we've made in support of Picatinny Arsenal are from Morris County. So the company has doubled in size as a result of this. And it's a lot of the community engagement and finding competent engineers, giving these folks job opportunities in the Defense Department to support. It's Morris County, it's Picatinny, it's the U.S. Army, the federal government. And what we were told is that's part of how this came to us, hiring so many people for a small company all from Morris County. And we're very honored, and I was very much in shock. But it is nice to be recognized after 20 years in business that, you know, the work that we do to give back. We make donations all the time to environmental and education and music nonprofits, and we're very proud to do it, but it's all very, we don't market it. It's very hush. I'm not really one to wave the flag too much. But in a circumstance like this, I get to go play golf for the day. And then I get to dress up nicely in the evening and schmooze and have a couple of drinks. And I'm just really amazed by it, to be perfectly honest.
It's a wonderful achievement. And for a firm that, by virtue of the work you do, probably typically flies a little under the radar, let's say.
I think it's one of our best attributes, believe it or not, is we fly below the radar. And when people meet us for the first time, or meet me for the first time, I can't tell you how often I've heard of you. And I'll say, well, if it's anything bad, then it's definitely not us. I can't believe how many people have heard of us or have seen things that we've done, been exposed to deliverables that we have made. And it begets more business because so-and-so has heard of us. I received a phone call yesterday from the COO of the U.S. Institute for Peace about helping them get back on their feet now that they've been reinstated. And I said, how fabulous is that? And how they got a hold of us was through a circuitous route, and we came recommended. Great.
Awesome.
We're going to offer them some pro bono work to help them along as well, because it feels nice to do good.
Yeah. And that's a great achievement. And it's great that you were recognized, and for really the growth that you've achieved, and doing it all in terms of boosting hiring locally too, is great too for the localized economy.
Frankly, I'm still in disbelief that people actively want to work here. and especially what we've been through COVID and recessions, and people still work here.
Yeah.
They want to work here.
And hitting the 20-year mark too is another achievement in and of itself.
Really, truly.
A lot of businesses don't make it that far. And certainly in the space that you're in, maybe that sometimes feels 20 in dog years. I don't know. But
I'd like to say it's out of perseverance and real grit. But yeah. I think it boils down to, as my wife would say, you're just too stubborn.
Yes.
Sounds right. Sounds right. I finished my PhD in 4 years instead of 7. Because why not? Let's just get it done.
Amazing. Last question. If one of our listeners heard your story and wanted to learn more about you or learn more about the work you're doing at Nomadics, what's the best way for them to connect?
I mean, it's simple. Nomadics.com. It's 8 characters. We paid a fortune for it. November, Oscar, Mike, Alpha, Delta, India, Charlie, Sierra.com. Or if you want to shoot us an email, info@nomadics.com. Real simple. I tell people all the time, not Nomad Tick. Those are the backpack people there with the T. We're not Nomad Dicks with the IX. Those are the popcorn people. We're the folks, Nomad Intelligence Consulting and Strategy. Nomad Dicks. And feel free to reach out at any point. We always love making new friends. We invite people to come by. You can't come to the office unannounced because it's a secure space. But we'll get you through the system. It's always nice to have visitors and have new friends. You know, and we truly enjoy just being part of the community and meeting new folks and engaging with people. I could talk to a tree. So my wife, she goes, go have fun. You know.
Well, Awesome. Awesome. Nick, hey, thank you so much for sh sharing your story and for talking a little bit about how family innovation and operational clarity can all work together in harmony. Again, we've been speaking with Nick D'Ambrosio, founder of Nomadics, and I'm your host, Ed D'Elia. Thanks so much for joining us at Growing Up B2B, and we'll see you next time. Hey, Nick, thanks so much for sharing your story.
Thank you for having me. Bye, everyone.
Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.deleonet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at deleonet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.